Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SLB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just when I'm on our head of joints, we have TalkCast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you need to reach me via Skype. My Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is Paul Franz. So to find me on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And of course, I have a secondary account called Franz Games where I announce this podcast, various news, and of course, the client updates. Moving on to the news from this week for ADB. New on Warehouse 23, Drive-Thru RPG, and War Game Vault this week was Nexus number 4. Steve Cole was busy working on April Fool's multi-game ship pack. Also, catalog number 53, and of course, art for the Gorn Master Starship book, which he's been working on. Actually, I think he's working on the Zinni before. Yeah, pretty sure Zinni was last week and Gorn this week, which is, I assume that means he's done all the Zinni stuff, which is awesome. Steve Petrick was busy working on the SFB updates, and of course, Zinni and Gorn Master Starship books. I'm not sure where he is when it comes to that, because I know that Gene was busy proofreading the April 1st ship cards, taking care of customers, and also beating off the spam assault on the BBS, and busy working on the GURPS Prime Directive revision, which is always good to see. Moving on to the SFB Online tournaments. Afraid to say, not much going on there. No much progress. The signups, well, they are closed. But we're still waiting for the tree for Andrew to post. Platinum Hat Tournament for 2017. We still haven't got any progress there either. But of course, I'm sure they've gotten some turns in. At least I hope they have. And just have not reported. Moving on to the library report. No progress there, unfortunately. And I really need to start bugging my converter people. And of course, I probably should spend some conversion time myself on the Andromeda and ground bases, so I at least can get all the Andromedans done. We still have 2,411 ships converted, yet to be converted. 918 gives us the percentage complete of 72.42%. Also, a quick note, which is we now have a Slack workspace that is at starfleetuniverse.slack.com if you want to join us over there. Currently, it's got a few select people, me and Dave and Russ from the chat room. But I want to invite everyone to come along. Just send me an email at sfuoncall@gmail.com and I'll be happy to send you an invite to your email address. So just send me an email and I'd be happy to send you an invite. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have me and we have the wonderful chat room, which actually seems to be filling up quite a bit more than has been as of late. Thank you, Mike and MG, for joining us this evening. So, cool. You know, I've said multiple times, which is I'd like to have this as a community. You know, I know a lot of people show up, but the more the merrier in the chat room, and that's why I created the Slack workspace called Starfleet Universe www.slack.com. That's where that is the URL for that. And you can join that workspace. Just send me an invite. Send me an email so I can send you an invite. Hey. That's just the way Slack works, unfortunately. Unlike like Facebook and the discussion board and things like that, where it's can be open, people can look in to see what's being talked about, and then can join the discussion after being authenticated via various platforms. In case of discussion board, sign up for an account. When it comes to Facebook, well, you're already there. You might just have to be invited to that group. Yep. Thank you, Dave. I see that you signed up, which is, again, thank you. yes, you are authentic. So, actually, talking about Slack and our Slack workspace, actually, the topic for this evening actually came from a audio recording that somebody put up on there, and also has been discussing it a little bit on the Slack channel, and that is the ISC and some of the inconsistencies with said ISC. I figured it would be a good place to start off with. So, given that, there's a few things that were pointed out. Let me see if that will help me at all. And that is, I'm just quickly. Crud. Give me a sec. I put it there, and it's gonna come up over there. So. I'm on a Mac and I'm using multiple desktops. So. Yeah. Russ and I listened to the whole thing. But yes, I did. So. You discussed some of the issues that you saw with it. Some of those things that came to mind that I remembered from this. Okay. From what you've read and what you've told me about the ISC, I've not actually done much research, because as Russ says, he just posted it last night, so I haven't had time to actually look into it very much because of other things going on in my life. Big surprise, like work, I have a job, these things, the concept of a job, but anyhow. And that one thing that he mentioned was, he was actually on the timeline, which is when the ISC actually, there it is, Y112. They had five early years dreadnoughts. And then three of them were basically taken out of service because of financial reasons. And there was a whole big hubbub about how much money was spent on these dreadnoughts, and how we really can't afford it. The whole idea is that's shaping how the IC see the world and see how they want to have their empire, the Concordium of these different races. Nations, whatever. I'm not exactly sure how you can picture this, because each race has their own nation, but I know that's not what really is defining it. But anyhow, another thing that was mentioned was, of course, that he pointed out that somewhere between Y150, the whole idea is to say in the mind frame that the ISC really don't want to spend money. They're more interested in the economic view of the world, of having everything done through economics, through corporations, and through the private sector and have it. So basically, the Concordium is this whole nice, you know, we're all lovey-dovey, love together. We just want to make money. We don't want to actually spend money on defense. We don't, there's, everyone's going to play nice, and no one's going to actually attack us. No one's going to try to take our, you know, any of our planets by force. You know, so you know, why do we need that big of a, we don't need a big fleet. Why do we need that? You know, obviously they still need some forces because of, not everyone does play nice, but, you know, some minor local pirates are going to occur because piracy is a way of living. Because, let's go back and discuss the whole idea of piracy to begin with. Because even in our history of piracy, piracy actually at one point was considered almost a legitimate way of acquiring wealth. And then after you acquired a certain amount of wealth through piracy, you then would retire from being a pirate and be basically a person of polite society after that point. So given that, you know, usually that why do people have become a pirate? Usually people become pirates because of money. That's a way that they see of acquiring money. And Lord knows, come on, this is the ISC. If one of their major concerns is financial, you would think that piracy would come natural. The more I think about it, the more I wonder why ISC just didn't become a whole nation of pirates if it's all about money. Because, I guess the one thing that would definitely put off it is that, okay, that means you have to attack somebody else. And at that point, no one else existed. Meaning, they didn't know about the other empires. You know, the Romulans, the Gorns, and all these crazy, whacked out people who didn't see the truth of, you know, if you stop fighting, you might actually have greater economic growth. And that's where you really want to see it. Yeah, I see that could be. Well, the thing is, if they pirate each other, then that's going to form some kind of conflict. Period. Because where the ultimate conflict, when it comes to resources and so forth, actually comes down to money and some point force. So that's a reason why the IC might not become a pirate state like the Orions did. Now, so obviously they realized that not, of course, just thinking about the ISC, they must have realized, okay, not everyone was goody two shoes. Why? Because they must have had local piracy at some point. They're not mentioned, but it would be. It's one of those things that occurs, which is piracy occurs when you have money, someone else has money and you want it, and the only way you see to actually acquire it is by force. Not killing, but by force. The threat of death is usually what's thought of by force. It's like, okay, either you give this to me or you die. You know, that's piracy. Now, so the whole idea that the ISC were completely shut out from the concept of idea of force, of fighting and conflict is kind of crazy. They must have thought about that. Now, and obviously, knowing somebody that was outside of the IC Concordium, you know, some outside of their borders, you know, that probably was kind of a strange concept, you know, because of they really hadn't run into anybody else. But, and Rust was pointing out that sometime in the time frame between Y150 and as late as Y160, Ryan Cartel moves in. Now, the question would be is, how do they know it was the Orions? How? Do the local pirates acquire things differently than the Orions? Yeah. Agreed. But I think. Okay, Russ is in the chat room is saying that the other side of that is that according to canon, they want to say the IC culture was shocked by violence. Yet, of course, as Russ also points out, the ship descriptions for much of the W and Y era ships describes outright attacks on even Navy capital ships by local pirates. Well, yeah, but I think what canon is probably referring to in that regard, and this is what I was going to get to, which is, it's not that the whole idea of violence, though violence itself, you know, I think the IC, you know, thought everyone was more enlightened as the IC, instead of Concordium, they themselves were enlightened to say, okay, the reason why they created the IC to begin with was to stop the violence. To stop this petty bickering and you know, between each other and working together. And of course, then as mentioning the local pirates, but I think when it comes to why and why 160, they actually watched this battle. It wasn't that they had these two different empires fighting it out. It wasn't until then that they actually realized that, okay, it's not just these local pirates that are doing this. These local small bands. These are empires fighting and not really understanding that it doesn't, there is no, fighting doesn't resolve anything. Which is what the IC came up with. It was like, you know, okay, fighting doesn't resolve anything. It won't fix anything. Of course, what happens is they fall into the same issue. Actually, after the great IC pacification. And we'll get to that. But, so I think that's what really shocked them was the level of the violence. Not that there was violence, but the level of it. That you could have, because these are two different empires that I'm sure they thought about it and went, wait a minute, you got these two different empires, it's obvious, and they must be, you know, large, because I'm sure the survey vessel, you know, also did some deep scans and saw that, oh, we can see that there's quite a few planets, you know, with, you know, that are actually occupied, and these two are fighting here. So obviously, you know, somewhere in there, there's got to be, you know, they both have to be occupied by these advanced races and empires. And as I said, the shock was the level of violence. That you could have, instead of just having these individual minor bit of attacks that local pirates would do, there are actually these full-on fleets of ships fighting each other. The whole level of violence that was occurring. I think that's what really shocked them. Now, moving on to So the Orions, arrived in the IC and laid down some hooks into it, into the IC, and placed some, bases up. Now, unfortunately, I have not read the background, so I can't tell you whether the Orions, even if, let's say, the Orions, Rossus was supposing that the Orions were so vicious that they actually killed everybody, so that they were unknown. I have a hard time believing that the Orions were that vicious. If you find out trade routes, you don't want to kill people. To a certain degree, yes, you'd want to kill people to keep it quiet. So you can reuse the same trade route, but come on. It's not like, you're going to destroy the ship, you're going to then and kill everyone so that they don't know that you're there. One, how many ships go missing before they realize that there's something going on? Something out the ordinary than just a lost ship. And possibly if they investigated to find that lost ship, they'd find the debris of the lost ship. In which case, they know that something's going on, because the question is, do local pirates do the same thing? Are they as violent as that? My guess is I agree. Dave, exactly. Dave pointed out that the firing weapons cost money, because you have to repair on all that kind of thing, and resources. And Orions are merchants, even if they are for illegal. Sometimes, actually, my understanding is Orions actually do also legal trade too. They don't just do illegal trade. Yeah, and hammering ships destroys cargo and makes less money, especially because. What's the one thing? If you capture a ship, what's better than destroying it? Capturing a ship and selling it. But again, I said, even if that was occurring, what are they going to sell it to? Really? How far off are you going to take the ship to sell it? It's probably going to be local. So definitely the locals probably knew about the Orions. Knew that there were some additional pirates. Now the question is, do they realize that these pirates weren't what are called local pirates? Some people just like pirates are pirates. They look like they're from a different race. But, there's some race that we haven't run into before, because the Concordium is quite large. Agreed. You have to make sure they change that then. I'm sure, actually, you joke, but I'm sure there's some kind of registration for that ship. Some identification, something that's unique, so that they know what ship is what. Really think about it. That only makes sense. Now each empire might have a different way of registering ships, and of course, Orions probably know them all. I would think then. So, the whole idea of that the Orions were vicious like that just makes no sense. It's not. It's so Orion like. In behavior. Ah, good point, Dave. You claim it as salvage. It was an abandoned ship. Agreed. I think that's actually more viable, I think. And possibly, have some of the locals, because I'm sure this happens, which is, it's like in of old, a pirate ship comes and attacks a ship. And then, of course, some of the people on the merchant say, "Hey, I want to join you guys. I don't want to die, so I'll join you guys." Or just not necessarily kill people either. Oh, agreed. That they're not all, green Orions. Even green, if they all were green Orions, they wouldn't be the same as the local five races. But who's to say that there isn't some local, some race that was unknown, But even so, the Orions, even if they had known they were, from a different part of the galaxy, all that would, only thing that could possibly, now that's the question is, did the government of the IC know, or was this the locals knew and never really discussed it with the government? And that is the whole idea that they have these, people that, these races, these beings that were attacking them, they were pirates that they'd never run into before, True. Got a point there. That at some point, it probably reaches the government. Now, what was the government going to say? The question is, how does the government do they react? There's two possibilities of reacting. One, they react by saying, "Oh, they're somebody was trying to pull the wool over their eyes, At the very least, at the start of it. Now, I understand that they keep on hearing about these rumors from these races of people that they run into. And of course, the always fun part I always have, which is, how do you talk to them? Don't know. But anyway, okay, now. Again, let's get back to the Orions. Okay, you're saying that sometime between Y-150 and Y-162, the Orion cartels entered. And that's kind of important to know whether it was closer to Y-150 or closer to Y-162. And here's why. Because according to canon, in Y-160, that's when the IC saw the races and in response created these new holes. Now, here's why I say that. And that is that you said that, okay, these eight hole types, it makes no sense that these eight hole types were like immediately available. Now, there's a couple things that could easily account for this. One, if you ever looked at the IC ships, for the most part, they're the same kind of ships. They're just scaled up, scaled down. So design-wise, they're pretty consistent overall. They're nothing really new. Now, when it comes to fleet operations and these ships. I have to agree to a certain degree that the question is, you know, how do they do this? Now, here's the thing. If the Orions were noticed, you know, a ship here, a ship there, you know, just these new pirates come into the area, which tells them that there are external forces. Maybe they're all, you know, just pirates, and that's all they are. They don't have, they're just pirates that moved into their area. They're not these great big empires fighting each other. Maybe they're just the Romulans and the Gorns and everybody else. It's just like the ISC. All they're doing is trying to do commerce. And then you have these Orion pirates, and they come into a new area of to pick up, you know, more wealth. You know, just happen to travel a little farther distance from their local vicinity. So given that, if the Orions were noticed closer to Y-150 than Y-162, that means there are multiple things that could be done. Number one, there are the simulators. And I'm sure you have read about Module C4. Yeah, Russ, but just saying, okay, Y-159, everything is a Y-era hull. Now, that is true. But it is possible that plans were already in the works for a new set of ships because of they wanted, because if I recall correctly, the Y, I'm not sure, I forget the Y, but I know the W era ships were definitely per race. So let's stick with that at the moment. I don't know if the Y era, if they're more were a consistent design across the races, that they decided to get with the Y era that they decided on a single one. Russ, you say, why simulate fleet tactics in Y-159 when there's no fleet threat? Because if they did know about the Orions, that meant that there are other empires out there. Now, when it comes to those empires, you know, do we think they're homicidal, crazy people that you know, we're going to need to fight these large battles? No, but here's the question. Did the thought, i.e., come on, we've got scientists thinking, you know, we've thought about a whole ideas of new tactics, new methodologies, things like that, which have never been thought before. And you have Skunk Works, which deal with the whole idea of this, like the whole idea of AI. And what happens if we have an AI smart enough to fight us? That that an AI, you know, has the ability to create forces and actually fight against us. I'm sure there are some think tanks are working on this problem, or at least thinking about this problem. And that's why I'm thinking of the whole idea of there might have been a Skunk Works, because it's easy, it's relatively cheap to work on fleet tactics, work on ships that were, because there had been a thought somewhere that there wouldn't be a possibility that they might have to defend themselves against another empire at some point. I'm not saying that, you know, that they're actually going to have to be, they're actually have to use these forces, you know, and, but there hadn't been an idea planted sometime, possibly just if they would have talked to the Iranians and, you know, talk to people saying, you know, we got this great war going on, you know, and maybe this does not believe them as much as they possibly should have, you know. Now, Russ, the one thing I agree that having the ships available, let's back up. Having the design for the hulls of the ships. Yes. Having the ships built. No. That's two different things. Having a design ready, you know, is easier to do than it is to actually build the actual ships themselves. So, in Y-160, when they saw the nuts, you know, in response, they say rolls out 8 brand new modern hulls. Were the actual ships themselves built in Y-160? No, they probably were not, because of it. Because some of these ships probably are multi-year programs. Okay, Russ and MG are just discussing it. And that is, MJ was mentioning that maybe that the IC got a hold of an Iranian ship and got information about the other empires, but then kept the secret. But Russ is pointing out that that would be counter to Kanan. And they said they became aware of the Gorns in Y-160. Now, one thing I have to mention in MG's defense about that idea is that it is possible that the government or some portion of the government knew about the other empires, but it was not publicly announced, publicly acknowledged about it until that survey cruiser. Because imagine having a survey cruiser. How many people are on board that survey cruiser? You're going to tell them to keep quiet about that? The best kept secret is the one that you keep by yourself. And the more people know about it, the harder it is to actually keep it quiet. So, actually, MG's point is possible that a spy agency, because there's nothing wrong, come on, even in corporations, there's nothing wrong with corporate espionage, corporate spying, finding out information in secret about your opponent, about rival companies. The whole idea of having a rival would not be new to the IC. So the whole idea of having a secret, not secret society, as, you know, like a KGB, you know, CIA kind of corp, you know, not the vision, thing. as part of the IC government is totally possible. And they possibly even kept it to themselves. You know, we're still researching. You know, we don't want to talk to anyone. Don't want to get people nervous, you know. Because I'll have to admit, I don't know the structure of the ISC and their government, the way the government ran. Runs, sorry. So, but, you know, so it is, there is possibility of the designs being available as of Y-160, you know, via Skunk Works project. But it wasn't until Y-160 where they had to basically publicly admit, yeah, we kind of knew about these. But, you know, at that point, it's like, oh, we're shocked and dismayed. So this is outrageous. I can't believe these people are nuts. We have to save them. So, and I can see, you know, and... given 9 years, you got 9 years to set up, because the next thing is mentioned, as Russ mentions in the timeline, which is the Y-169, the IC first engages the Rhymes and Gorns. By this time, the ISC had already deployed their border stations and had a secure border. Now, the second part, yeah, whatever. No one could truly have a secure border, but the whole idea of having border stations in 9 years, that is completely possible. You know, to have them in that period of time. Now, obviously, the big thing would be, and I'm assuming at that point there'd be an all-out push as of Y-160 to find out more about, okay, where are the quote-unquote ISC's borders, true borders. You know, with their neighbors. And now, another thing that's mentioned on timeline is Y-176. First ISC movement into Rhymen territory, incursions into Gorn territory a week later. Yeah, just send me an email. I'd be happy to send you guys an invite so you can get access to all this stuff. Now, and that makes sense. You know, okay, so it looks like in Y-169, the first engaged, okay, now, according to the timeline, that means the IC did not engage the Romulan and Gorn fleets in Romulan or Gorn territory. They had engaged them in IC territory, what the IC considered IC territory. Of course, the Romulans and Gorns are going, who the heck are these people? You know? Never seen these kind of ships before. Which... Let me tell you something about first contact. First contact, especially a violent one, where there's actually a battle involved, is a scary, scary prospect. Why? Because you have these unknown weapons with unknown abilities. And so you're fighting on that first battle, you're fighting blind. You don't know how close you can get or how far you need to be. You know, what's the range that you do actually engage them? You know, because I'm sure the first time the IC fired a PPD at a Romulan or Gorn vessel, it freaking flipped them out because they've never seen something like that before. Because basically, my understanding is that you have basically a plasma current going down a carry wave, so it's going super fast. You know, it's like a plasma going transwarp speed, you know, whatever you want to call it, which is totally, totally crazy. And so you can just Mike and Matt. Yeah, you don't actually have to download the app, but you can do it directly on the website at slack.com. And as I said, it's starfleetuniverse.slack.com. That's the actual workspace, but you need an invite because they don't allow open invites. There's no, which I wish they actually had it. You can say, oh, here's a link to ask for an invite. So, to me, that engagement, you know, so that's always the most scariest is that. Now, the one thing that was that Russ also mentioned in the recording, which is the whole idea of dash warp, which I think about dash warp, the more it kind of almost sounds like RTN, where with the RTN network, you had to have a beacon of some sort, usually a base. Lord knows it's kind of important to have a base there because a beacon on a base because of a base can actually defend itself. And I understand the whole issue with the pacification and how quickly the IC got from where they were over to Lyran space, which according to Russ would take approximately 4 years at high warp. Now, I'm assuming that you said fast warp or whatever. I don't think I heard you talk about strategic warp and how fast that would be. I'm not sure if that's what you were talking about when it comes to, you were talking about 4 years. And I agree that it's problematic, i.e. Getting them over to it. So the whole idea of the pacification is that sometime, somewhere, before the actual pacification occurred, when they actually actively started the campaign of a pacification, it would mean Yeah, Matt, that was my understanding too. I just don't know how that differs from Dash. Now, if it is different from Dash, the big question would be that if it required basic beacons to be set out, that would mean that the IC one, my guess, it would take at least what? Like 10 years to set up the actual pacification campaign before they actually could start it. And that is because of, if it would take 4 years to get over there, that means they'd have to send out ships on a long range plan to lay them down. So now, of course, the big issue with that is that then you'd also have to figure out what the borders are for these nations. But that could actually be acquired from the Orions, because I'm sure the Orions would be more than happy to sell the information to you. They'd be happy to give you the information, just because that's part of what they do, is they sell information. So, let's say that requires at least a 10-year. I'm thinking at least a 5-year, if not 10-year plan. On to set it all up, to set up the different beacons, so that you can do the dash warp to get all the way over to Lyran space. And of course, actually, if it is just something as simple as a beacon, I think you could actually do it, But the beacons would have to be basically, what is it? Jeez. There's a way of doing it, which is basically you shut down everything. So it's quiet and it makes it really undetectable. So given that, if it was able to get to that point, let's say that you can deploy all of these beacons so that you could do a dash warp, and these were left undetected, which I can see it occurring. It's just like the RTN network, the Andromedas had these bases all over the place. Did people know that they existed? No, they did not, because space is very large. So given that, and assuming that the IC got the information about the border layout of the that octant, the alpha octant, I can see it being doable. It just required planning beforehand. So it is possible. And Russ mentioned that the part I just don't get is why a ship couldn't drop out of dash halfway between the points. Well, why can't the Andromeda drop out halfway between? I'm pretty sure the same thing occurs with the Andromedas when it comes to the RTN network. Is that they don't? I'm not sure they really can drop out between the two. I would think that in theory they should be able to drop out, but because I understand the whole thing with beacons, I can see how that can easily. You can move at faster speeds than you could do at normal high warp, where you're under control. Instead of, because with a beacon, with a subspace beacon, which you can pick up and basically just point the ship towards that, there is no navigation involved. You do not have to look to see, okay, where am I going? You're going towards, you're like a moth going to the flame. That is your target, and that's how you adjust your ship, is towards that one target. Now, the whole idea of being able to stop in the middle of it, it's possible that you could. I would think that if the beacon would be destroyed in the middle of transit, that at that point you have to stop. Because you have no longer have a beacon to home in on, you have no longer have a way of guiding the ship. Because if you're using dash warp, you're not looking at your surroundings and trying to guide the ship that way. Now, obviously, dash warp, I would think, then would be very. Would be very, I don't know. Well, as I said, Russ, you could possibly shut it all down, but at that point you'd be disoriented and you would not know where you were, because the whole idea of dash warp is that there's a path, I'm assuming a direct path from point A to point B, from beacon to beacon, which is considered clear of all, large bodies of, like planets, asteroids, solar systems, things like that. So, I agree that the whole dash warp thing, there is an issue there. I will have to agree on that point. I guess one of the things that when it comes to dash warp is that you would never want to turn it off. You never want, because as I said, when you stop, where are you stopping? You don't know where you are. You don't have navigation turned on. You don't know where you might have an idea, but you're going so fast. The whole idea of dash is you're going so fast that navigationally, your navigational equipment is not designed for dash. It can't up to date fast enough to know where you are ever. Truly, it can guess, but of course, by the time it guesses, you're what? How many? Possibly 1,000 light years off. You know, so maybe at that point it's kind of pointless. So until you actually enter into, not I would say real space, but that's not the way Star Trek, the Star Trek universe works. But when you stop at that point, then you can enable the navigational beacons, navigation, and actually and see where you are. So, I can see them dropping out of dash warp, but there's big issues with that because you don't know where you are. So you never ever want to drop out dash warp. Possibly because the big question is at dash warp, what does the outside look like? Because you're going so fast, there is no navigation. There's no stars. There's just streaks in the sky. As you're flying at these really fast speeds, you know, greater than warp 10. You know, it's just it's so nuts speed. And that's why I said, at that point, I would think you should be able to drop out dash warp, but you just would not. You could do it, but you don't do it because after you drop out of dash warp, you're toast. You know. Yeah, because you're basically you're completely disoriented. Navigation is offline. It'll take you a while to reacquire where you are in the sky. This isn't like GPS, where GPS you have beacons running all, you know, sounding off all around you, and that's how you find out where you are, is from those beacons. In the case of plops, you know, take somebody and plop them down somewhere in the universe and say, okay, where are you? You know, and don't even get me started with Star Trek and the whole idea of warp and time dilation and all this. It's one thing to drive you absolutely bonkers to really, if you think about these things hard, because I thought about these things, and one thing that always is crazy, which is that, okay, we're flying faster than light. Now, given that we're flying faster than light, and so that means anytime we're actually looking at a star that's distant, we're looking at history. We're looking at what happened in its past. So, in theory, we could be, if we say, oh, there's a star there, we're going to go to that star, we could be flying to that star, and by the time we get to the star, it doesn't exist. You know? And that's the whole, and then we have the whole idea of communication in the Star Trek universe, and how does that work? You know, so that people can communicate using, you know, faster than light. I mean, really faster than light communication to talk over vast distances. That alone is something that just boggles the mind. Yeah, man, I tend to agree with that. Said that. Matt says it works by a plot device. Okay. That doesn't surprise me. Russ is mentioning that what brings Dash in the topic of ICN Y-160 is that canon states that Y-air ships did not use Dash. Okay, so don't use Dash. What's the point? Just because they don't have Dash doesn't mean they don't have high warp. The whole idea of strategic movement. Because at some point they must have that kind of... Russ, I'm not sure how that one goes with the other, really. Because he's saying that, you know, thus a need for faster ships for pirates wreaking havoc. Yes, but the thing is with Dash Warp is for point-to-point traveling. That's what it's designed for. It's not designed to... Go someplace really fast, where you're looking to go at this spot, but you don't know. You know. Yeah, but yeah, definitely. I agree that the Dash is like the RTN. Because it has beacons involved. But my understanding of strategic movement, high warp, that's what I'm thinking, versus strategic movement. Because strategic movement, you're still not going as fast as you possibly can go. So, okay, but oh, understood. But as I said, unless you have a pinpointed area, you know where it is, and the area that you want to go to is recognized by a beacon. You know, certain planets and so forth, certain solar systems. Dash movement makes a difference. You know? You can go at high warp, but still not using Dash. Yes, Dash would help if they had it, but it's not a requirement. Really? Okay, so I think we'll wrap it up with that. Had a nice discussion here talking about the IC and the pacification and how there are some quirks about the IC that have not been clarified when it comes to canon of the IC. As if it wasn't obvious, I think I disagree a little bit with Russ and saying, oh, the IC has all these things that are broken. No, they're not broken. they're just not clarified on how it occurs. And I understand that if you want fiction to actually answer those questions. Now, of course, there's always the issue that Steve Cole might say, one, they don't want them answered all in one fell swoop. Or they might just disagree with your answers on how they think it will happen. They've already got an idea of how they want to resolve the problem, and they don't want to go the way you're going, and therefore it might actually, if they go with the way they want to go, the story doesn't work. So we'll just have to wait and see how that all turns out in the long run. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.